This media is brought to you by Polyscope.
I'm Cassie Bishop.
And I'm Ray Turing.
Dive into the heart of AI innovation with us on AI Daily.
Bringing you breaking news in AI, unveiling the future as it unfolds.
Subscribe now and stay ahead with AIDaily.us.
Why listen to the past when you can listen to the future? Welcome to the Think Future podcast, broadcasting live from the heart of Silicon Valley, California. We focus on AI, startups, and the future, not necessarily those, and not necessarily in that order.
So much for coming on the show. It's great to finally meet you nowadays, because this is how we do it through Zoom, just meet each other in person, right? So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your organization and what you're passionate about?
Sure. Yeah, thanks so much, Chris. Wonderful to meet you as well. So my name is Doug Heckman. I'm the Chief Solutions Officer at Shorefront.
You solve every problem. You just solve everything.
I wish. Yeah, that might be in the job responsibilities, but I wish that I included it under my accomplishments. I would say I do my best, but
nice. Yeah, at one point, I was trying to popularize the term solutionist, but I couldn't figure out, and I don't think I could figure out how to get that popularized. But go ahead, sorry.
No, I actually think it's a really good word, and from my experience in the enterprise software world, it's really an apt term, because you're not just looking for a software with a particular feature or function. You're looking for a partner that understands your needs, understands what your goals are, and helps you best apply the solution or the functions they might have into the proper solution for your organization. Yep. So that's one of the reasons that we use, you know, solution as our title here. So I'm the Chief Solutions Officer at Shorefront. I've been with the organization since really before its inception. Shorefront was formally started in 2018, but it was born.
Wow, that is recent.
Fairly recent, yeah. About six years ago, I would say we were formally.
You made it 6/10 of the way to surviving, because most startups like only the last 10 years, right? So you're doing all right.
Yes. Well, thank you for that, Chris. Yeah. No. But I say that, you know, the idea and the inspiration behind Shorefront comes from many years before that. Our founder, Luke Wong, has decades of experience in the retail and consumer products industry. I previously, when I was in college, started a consumer products company in Pennsylvania that grew pretty well regionally out there. Nice. Luke and I started working together at a venture firm in Los Angeles, which is where the idea for Shorefront really came from while we were working together there. And then, you know, through a lot of iteration and work, we, you know, further identified refined specifically the problems that we solve, which is helping retailers, brands, and manufacturers work more effectively together to bring products to market for their mm-hmm. consumers. So lots of details behind that, but that's kind of our rough history and background.
That is super high level. Can you go a little deeper? Go a little deeper. This is like, yeah. That sounds like what everybody wants to do. Just go for it.
So I guess to get a little bit more detailed, if you examine really, you know, the largest part of the United States economy is consumer purchasing, mm-hmm. and an overwhelming amount of that consumer spending goes to consumer packaged goods, consumer products that you find at your, you know, tier one retailers, Amazons, Walmarts, Targets, and from your largest brands. I know we're, you know, a couple of years outside of when everyone was talking about supply chains, right? Supply chain crunches this, supply chain crunches that. But even in the height of those conversations, they were relatively confined to just physical supply chains, which is where we kind of saw the gap in focus and both, and also the gap in provided solutions. And that's because in our experience and in our observation and data, About two-thirds of a product supply chain is actually the information supply chain. Companies move mountains to get an extra couple of days out of their physical supply chain. How can I more efficiently manufacture this? Or how can I get this from the port of Qingdao to the port of Los Angeles 2 days quicker? But at the end of the day, you know, most product life cycles, depending on what category of goods you're in, are anywhere between like 3 or 4 months on the low end, all the way up to like 12 plus months. And about two-thirds of that cycle is all the information supply chain, right? What is it that I want to bring to market? What type of sneaker, what type of shirt, you know, what type of furniture is it that I think consumers are going to want to purchase in the cycle that this is going to hit? And you have to work collaboratively. Imagine that you're, you know, an apparel brand. You not only have to work collaboratively amongst your merchandisers and your designers and your product developers in-house to formulate that hypothesis and put together the specifications of what is it that I'm going to bring to market, but you also have to work with your manufacturing partners, right? What are the textiles that we have available? What are their limitations, right? What are the cost constraints that we have here? What's it actually going to take to manufacture and sample these items in the way that you want? All of those touch points, until you end up getting to the finalized product that you're saying, this is good, I'm going to write a production order to manufacture it, that's two-thirds of your supply chain, which is the information supply chain. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's long been our observation that even the largest retailers and largest brands in the world, to manage that part of their information supply chain, two-thirds of their overall supply chain, are using rudimentary tools, emails, spreadsheets, phone calls, WeChats, PowerPoints. And so
everything falls back onto that, though, right? It's like this foundational set of tools that everybody falls back on. And then so what makes your how is yours different? I mean, how does it differentiate from what people are using right now?
Yeah, great question. I think maybe if we take one more moment to kind of talk about why things fall back.
Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt. Go for it.
I think that it's a great point. And the reason why things fall back to those default tools is because all of the super well-designed or developed efficient solutions for enterprises. Think of your world-class ERP systems, you know, Microsoft Dynamics, SAP, NetSuite, inventory management systems. They're all designed.
Oh my God. Please don't make me think of those things.
But I think that, you know, that's a good point for us to revisit a little later in the conversation when we talk about some of the opportunities. But when you think about them, you know, all of those existing systems are designed for individual firms or organizations to solve their individual needs. But at the end of the day, when Dick's Sporting Goods buys from Nike and Nike works with their, you know, factories in Vietnam, it's no longer an individual firm. Everyone has made their own technology selections. So what that means is team members on the front lines of those businesses, the buyers at Dick's, the salespeople at Nike, the product designers at Nike who are working with their factories. Well, I know you don't have my internal solution in common. What do you have? Everyone has emails, spreadsheets, PowerPoints, and PDFs.
Yeah. So it's almost like a translation mechanism between these two things. Even though these companies work together all the time, there's just there's very difficult for them to exchange information in a way that's useful. Everyone's an island or a silo. Right?
That's exactly right. And what that means is okay, so we've broken down, you know, it's the old philosophy problem. At the end of the day, the premises are turtles all the way down. We've gotten down to our most basic level of turtles, which are the emails and spreadsheets that we're working together in because that's all we have in common. And what that ends up meaning is, you know, okay, I'm a brand and I want to design one new product. On average, there's 40 points of communication, whether those are emails or phone calls or WeChats. There's like 12 different versions of a spreadsheet with 200 different attributes that might be in there, a handful of PDFs and PowerPoints, and that's for one product. So you can imagine why, if I have all of those different touch points and iterations, why I have two-thirds of my total supply chain devoted just to the lift of going from new product concept to finalized product in the information portion of that supply chain.
And that's a super simplistic product. I mean, that's not even talking about the complexity of the product. The more complex the product gets, the more and more information there is, right?
Yeah, you nailed it. When we get into things like electronics or medical devices or heavy furniture, like the more complex, the harder, the more touch points there are, the more data there is, the harder it gets to achieve with those set of tools. So fundamentally, we witnessed this issue happening and we looked and said, hey, the biggest retailers and the biggest brands are doing it like this. And they're not just doing it like this for one product. They're doing it for millions of new products every year. And and then we also looked and said, well, what's the net impact of that? Number one, like if let's imagine that you're designing something fashionable, like a shirt or an accessory or something else. Well, if 2/3 of my supply chain are this inefficient because that information supply chain is so inefficient, that means I have to formulate my hypothesis. What are people going to want in October of 2024? I have to start formulating that hypothesis in December of 23. And you can imagine, you know, there are no modern Nostradamuses. Like you can imagine what the on target prediction rate.
Unless you call influencers like TikTok influencers.
Sure.
Leading the way.
That's a great example, right? The trends from an influencer can make a trend change happen, you know, almost momentarily. So
absolutely,
that trend change happens 2 or 3 months away from when you're in market. Well, maybe your supply chain, your information supply chain is now agile enough to capitalize on it. But if you're designing and developing 9-12 months outside of your market cycle, the likelihood of you being on time, on trend, on cost just craters, right?
Oh,
so that means you end up marking down merchandise, you lose profitability. It's a whole negative, almost the inverse of a positive feedback cycle. It's a negative feedback cycle in that it causes all of these cascading impacts to the business. So when we looked and said it kind of takes you by surprise that the world's largest firms are doing business together in this way. And then you look and say, this has monumental impacts to their overall profitability, their overall ability to delight their end customers. We looked and said, we have to solve this. So fundamentally, that's what Surefront does. Surefront is a shared platform. So this is, you know, one of the fundamental things that we think is going to be the next paradigm shift in enterprise software. It's a shared platform for our retail customers, our brand customers, and our manufacturer customers. They all log in there together. And now there's a little bit of an enterprise gateway there. So it's not like an Amazon or an Alibaba where you can go in and see anything that anyone's working on. Obviously, some of the best brands in the world want to keep that information relatively well guarded. So it's just more like an open collaborative platform where it's open to your existing network of trusted business partners, whether those are your retail customers or whether those are your upstream manufacturers.
Right. Those things that we used to call extranets, where people would just, you know, you would have a certain specific individuals or companies would be able to access these specific things. So does it sit on top of email? I mean, can email feed in and out of it, or is it a separate application?
Yeah, great question. So we have as a necessary part of all of the features and functions in Surefront, collaboration is crucial, right? These are highly collaborative processes amongst team members and external partners with different specialties. So we have lots of built-in collaborative tools that also feed in and out of email notifications to help bring you into the platform. If you might be, hey, I'm on a sourcing trip overseas, I just got an email notification, I have to go look at something in Surefront so that I can get it done by a certain deadline. We find that's really useful.
Mm. Very cool. So who are you targeted towards? I mean, are you, you're not talking about the big guys, are you mid-range, or where do you sit?
Yeah, market. So where's your market? Actually, our solutions are most appropriate for enterprise-grade customers. So think of your, you know, Fortune 50 companies that are retailers and brands, as well as mid-market. Typically, we find that we're a good solution fit for any companies that start to mature into like that $50 million a year plus on the lower end. Hey, I'm just moving off of QuickBooks and I'm adopting NetSuite or Acumatica, a more formalized email or more formalized ERP application. And then all the way up to these multi-billion dollar largest retailers and brands, because they're the ones experiencing the negative impact of having to use emails and spreadsheets and PDFs for all of their most critical transactions and for their information supply chain at such an enormous scale that it has a huge value for them to solve.
So why wouldn't I use something like a project management tool or a product management tool instead of this? Like what gives it that special sauce?
Yeah, absolutely. Great question. So really, I'd say two things. Number one, project management tools are wonderful. We use them internally. Like we're a big Atlassian shop with a lot of our project management tools. But they're, I want to call it industry agnostic, right? You can put anything into there, which makes it really flexible to address a lot of lower level needs, but not in the most detailed way that might be industry defining. So if you look and say, it's maybe the difference between having a great planning tool like what you get out of the Intuit planning tool for, it's slipping off the tip of my tongue at the moment, but it's like a financial planning tool for individuals. Maybe I'll compare. It's maybe like the difference between utilizing a Robinhood phone stock trader versus like a Bloomberg terminal, right?
Right.
If you're a professional.
Wow, very different.
Very different, right? You're a professional on Wall Street. You're talking about decisions that are having billions of dollars worth of impact. You're going to want the best, most optimized tools for the specific type of job that you're doing. Whereas, hey, if you're casual and you just want to play with some, you know, meme stocks, yeah, okay, go ahead on Robinhood and go do that on your own. And I still
can't buy meme coins on Robinhood yet. It's like, can you buy meme coins on Robinhood? I don't know about
meme coin. I'm not sure. I haven't really gotten too much into the crypto side myself, but meme stocks, I know for sure. I'd say that the first one of our major differences is, the fact that we have solutions that are optimized specifically for consumer products in the retail space, whereas project management, great for a lot of things, but not ideal for certain things. The second thing that I'd say is a real big challenge that typical project management solutions can't handle. They are also really built with individual organizations and teams in mind. So if you have to manage data access permissions or institutional or organizational hierarchies across multiple different, you know, I might be Walmart. I've got 100,000 different suppliers and brands and manufacturers I work with. There's no real way to manage that effectively in a tool like an Atlassian that's optimized for collaboration within a single organization. So a lot of our intellectual property that Surefront has is all about how do you create these shared workspaces across organizations where you're allowing each organization to set up their own organizational hierarchy set of permissions, and then ultimately resolving all of those so that you get the right people in the right workspace to efficiently conduct their work.
Fantastic. Fantastic. So let's go a little bit into your startup story. So you said you've been around for 6 years or so.
Yes.
Was there like a single moment where you realized this thing was going to fly? Because usually when startups, they put their product out there and they get their audience, and then there's like, okay, how do we know this is going to really take off? Like, was there like a single moment when you realized, yeah, this is going to happen?
Yeah. And I would say that it was probably with our first couple of customers. So Surefront started in 2018. We had some like beta communities as we were developing the product. Excuse me. And then we launched commercially in January of 2020 at NRF. And I remember sitting there in
Person? Or did you all had masks on, or what was it like?
January 2020.
This is just before. That's right.
I remember sitting in the lounge in JFK looking at the news story saying they're starting to screen passengers from JFK and LAX for this.
Oh, man. You're thinking, oh, this is the best time to launch a product, right?
Well, yes. At first, we were like, oh, excited product launch. Everything's coming along great. But then we were like, you know, there was 5 or 6 months where institutions mainly said there are absolute spending freezes. We're not hiring anyone. We're not investing.
Yeah. We're not even thinking about anything else. Forget it.
Right. There was so much uncertainty. So we were a little bit worried after that. But then as we started to onboard some of our first commercial customers, like larger brands here in the United States, the moment that we looked and said, hey, we think we're really onto something here. Our core hypothesis is, well, it's difficult to build a system that can serve the needs of, you know, networks of organizations. But unlike, you know, Uber and Airbnb, where you have to market and sell to two-way marketplaces where you have to have enough drivers and you have to have enough riders, that marketing and selling portion can be a lot more difficult. On our end, the technology risk was the more difficult side. But then once we had that and we started to see even our first few big brand customers in the United States immediately turn around and mandate the use of our software to all of their upstream suppliers.
That was the moment.
Because people could say, yeah, you know, enterprise sales cycles, they're always a little bit longer than you ever want them to be. But if you get 30 customers out of it instead of one customer out of it, then you have, you know, an order of magnitude unfair advantage that you get.
It depends on who that one customer is. If it's Walmart, it's like everybody steps in line.
That's right. Now I want to be clear. Yeah, we don't have a formal relationship with Walmart yet, but when we witnessed it in small scale at first, we looked and said, it's working in that smaller scale. As we continue to scale up and we see larger customers, retailers, and brands start to adopt and push to their networks of suppliers, and them continuing to adopt and say, oh, you know, Surefront's really great. I'm going to use it with maybe a different customer of mine. We start to see we're basically growing based off of the existing networks of our customers, not playing a game where you have to build a two-way market and discovering and making those relationships for the first time.
Well, once you have a certain number of customers, then they're all telling their customers and they're telling their partners, hey, get on this so we can work together better. Right?
That's exactly
so
right.
You're seeing an exponential increase, like a network effect.
That's right. That's exactly right. Yeah.
Now, in the pre-call, we were talking about interfaces. Is your interface really good? I mean, did you actually do a really good interface? Because as far as I'm concerned, all enterprise applications interfaces suck. So I don't know what you did. You guys do something?
Yeah.
Like, please don't.
I love this question. And I'll invite, you know, I'm obviously biased. I've been working on the design and development of this product for a long time. We have a phenomenal team. But I'll invite anyone listening, just go to our website, surefront.com, to check out. Let me know if you think that we did a good job with the interface of our enterprise software. But I actually, you know, I gave a talk at Carnegie Mellon School of Computer Science about a year ago on this topic specifically. And one of the two major paradigm changes we see in enterprise software is the demands for improving user experiences, right? You have a lot of digital natives that are now in the decision-making roles about what software, what solutions we adopt.
Yeah.
There's no more appetite for saying
these are Facebook, TikTok, Twitter folks.
They grew up, they had iPhones while they were learning to drive. Like their standard for what constitutes an acceptable user experience is two orders of magnitude higher than what most enterprise software has traditionally provided.
Exactly.
And beyond that, what we also see them doing is we no longer see the appetite to say, hey, after I buy a software and invest in implementing it for my company, am I then going to have every time I need to get a new user onto the software, going to spend $5,000, $10,000 to send them to a software specific training conference over a week to get them up? And they don't want that investment. And frankly, a lot of times those digital native users, even if they attend the conference, they say, I don't really like it. It's harder to use than these emails and spreadsheets that I'm already using anyways.
Yeah.
So I tell my boss, sure, I'll go to the conference, but I'm still going to go back to using what I'm using anyway. So what we find, the evolving shift number one in enterprise software is you still have to deliver that enterprise grade power and configurability, but you have to couple it with a very easy to use consumer grade experience. And and those two things for, anyone with a design background that's listening, those two things are a little bit like inherently opposed, right? The more complexity and configurability you offer, it inherently makes some, more degrees of freedom to choose from, a little bit more cognitive load. So it takes a lot of really intentional design to deliver those things thoughtfully and effectively. But I will say from pretty much any enterprise software I've used or that we compete with or that I see on the market, I would rank ours in the top 1%. I hope that we get feedback as people visit our site that that's the case.
Yeah, I would like to hear that too as well. So it's not a technology focused podcast unless we talk a little bit about AI today. What are you doing on the AI front? Are you implementing AI? Is AI in the roadmap? Where are you with AI?
Yeah, what I would say is where we're looking to incorporate AI solutions and where we're currently working on at the moment is in like a functional role based AI. Where can we make things easier for you, save you time, save you manual input? Now that may end up expanding at a certain point, but we still kind of take the perspective at the end of the day, we want the smartest, most knowledgeable people in our industry to be the ones responsible for making decisions. We just want to give them as much time and as much information to make those informed strategic decisions as possible. So for example, what we're looking and saying is, well, maybe instead of having a designer mock up, six different views of a Southwest print pattern, maybe it would be easy just in Surefront to write a text to image based generation of AI generation of images to say, hey, give me six different Southwest patterns with these types of elements and have that generated for you in a second. And then let that designer iterate off of the best ones of those. Or, maybe the opposite way, we're taking something, you're giving us an image and we want to improve maybe what the attribution on this looks like, or take attributes that were never formally manually input in text and read that off of an image. Those are the things where in the near term that we're looking, because we know and we've heard from our customers how impactful it will be to get those in their hands right away. The longer term, predictive AI stuff, we have some ideas, but I'd say that's probably a little too far out to talk about.
Well, speaking of too far out, it's time to think like a futurist. It's the year 2034. where do you think you're going to be in 10 years? Where do you think the software will be? Where do you think the space will be in 10 years?
Yeah, you know, on our side, we always have big dreams and audacious goals, but, you know, humble expectations. So I'm hoping, you know, I really see Shorefront's ability to change the way that these largest organizations in our economy conduct their business the same way that the Oracles and the SAPs of yesteryear have, right? So I'm hoping in 10 years that we kind of become that Bloomberg terminal level standard for our industry.
Do you ever see a possibility of these things becoming totally automated, where the inputs come in and the thing actually creates new products, and then all you need to do is go, okay, not okay, okay, not okay? Do you see that in 10 years?
Maybe to a certain degree, where you're saying, hey, I'm testing out product concepts, or maybe right. I'm even getting those product concepts as I have the initial idea, and they're getting in front of consumers so that we're testing them before we ever produce and manufacture and take on all that financial risk. Absolutely, I see that as a possibility. But I will say, you know, the actual hypothesizing of what is it that consumers are going to want is such a broad space that, you know, we're already talking about jobs for prompt engineers. Maybe designer becomes a little bit more mixed with prompt engineer at that point in time, but I don't see it becoming a fully humanless process probably ever, because at the end of the day, we're designing for human preferences, not necessarily discrete level, you know, human decisions. So I think that's always going to end up being a substantial amount of human thought and hypothesis.
Oh, no, definitely will. But I'm seeing a point where you've gathered enough data and enough preference information to go, hey, system. Oh, hey, Shoresoft, like build something or create like 10 new products. Yes. From what you know that you think are going to sell. And then, of course, it'll be in an editing mechanism where people actually come in and go, yeah, yes, no, yes, no. So that's, you think that's
in that case, I would say much less than 10 years away for that type of interaction. Yes.
Because you've got the data, you know what people want.
But even, you know, beyond Shorefront, like when our customers come in here, they're typically bringing to the table, you know, 5-10 years worth of not only their product data and their product hypotheses, but also the demand signals that ended up in reality of what the consumer purchasing is. So all Shorefront's doing is we're packaging that so that you can more effectively, more quickly make better decisions. And so it's, I don't think that one's a hurdle that's 10 years away. I think that's more like 3 years away. Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, this has been great. Thank you so much. So if somebody wants to get in touch with you, what's the best way?
Sure. I would say if you're interested in what Shorefront does, check out our website, shorefront.com. There's lots of information there. Great ways to contact myself or some of the other team members. If you want to learn more, I guess, about the space in general, or, you know, some of our recent partnerships with Carnegie Mellon University, feel free to contact me, doug@shorefront.com.
Awesome. Well, I'll put everything in the show notes. So if anybody can get in touch with you, they can just do it that way. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Chris. It's been a pleasure.
Great talking with you. Thanks.
You too. Take care. Bye-bye.